For WMRA News, I'm Matt Bingay. Special elections are on the way in Virginia to fill two state Senate seats. Jay Lark warns that Virginia's Department of Health is in bad shape. Amazon has filed plans to build a second data center in Louisa County. And students in Highland County learn about watershed health by taking a canoe adventure. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, November 8th. The election isn't over yet. Two sitting members of the state Senate got new jobs in the U.S. House of Representatives on Tuesday, and that means at least two special elections. Michael Pope has a preview.
One of the special elections for the state Senate will be in Northern Virginia, where a handful of candidates are expected, including a sitting member of the House of Delegates and a controversial former progressive prosecutor. David Ramadan at George Mason University's Schar School says the party's choice of a candidate here will be a key to victory.
If the Democrats end up with a polarizing candidate, the Republicans could invest money into the seat and the governor might come in and spend enough money to get a Republican to win it in the special election general.
The other Senate special election will be in the suburbs and exurbs between Richmond and Charlottesville. Wes Bellamy of Virginia State University says former state Senator Amanda Chase might be able to make a comeback here, despite being censured by the Senate in 2021.
MAGA Republicans could see that as a badge of honor and saying that she needs to be back in. And in other regards, more quote unquote traditional Republicans could say that's an exact reason why she doesn't need to be in. With Trump being reelected, you just really never know.
Control of the chamber is at stake in the Senate, which currently has 21 Democrats and 19 Republicans. Michael Pope.
Vice President Kamala Harris and Senator Tim Kaine won in Virginia, but their final margins of victory were less than Democrats in years past. Senator Mark Warner had some ideas on how Democrats could improve their performance in the Commonwealth. Warner claimed that legislation Democrats passed had support, but the spending in bills like the Inflation Reduction Act didn't reach people quickly enough.
I think there was a failure to appreciate how hard-hitting inflation has been. And the notional idea, well, we got these bills passed, but if prices in the grocery store are still going up, that's what people felt.
Warner also said Democrats should renew a focus on the border. A state constitutional amendment expanding a property tax exemption to surviving spouses of all service members who died while serving the country passed overwhelmingly on Tuesday. Megan Pauley with VPM News has this report.
93% of Virginia voters supported the constitutional amendment, including Randy Baker, a Hanover County veteran.
My brothers and sisters that gave everything that they would ever have, that their families deserve to be taken care of.
Currently, the state constitution says that the property tax exemption is only for the spouses of service members who are either 100% disabled or who are killed in action. That's a specific Department of Defense term that means the death occurred at the hands of enemies and has meant that the families of those killed in training accidents or even potentially those who die from an illness while on the job have been left out. Advocates say this year's constitutional amendment is a fix to what they say was an unintentional oversight of the 2015 tax exemption.
Megan Pauley reporting. Amazon has filed plans to build a second data center in Louisa County as part of an $11 billion investment. Dwayne Adams, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, told WVIR that both data centers will take up less than 1,600 acres of county land. Louisa officials have also placed strict zoning requirements on the projects to try and preserve the county's rural setting. The second center is set to be built across from Northeast Creek Reservoir. One center is already under construction in Lake Anna. A state watchdog had a startling diagnosis on Thursday. Virginia's Department of Health is in bad shape. From Virginia Public Radio, Brad Kuttner has more from Richmond.
The Joint Legislative Audit and Review Commission, or JLARC, said Virginia's Department of Health has been strained under the weight of mismanagement in the last few years. Here's JLARC head Hal Greer.
It has been struggling to perform its basic administrative functions for years now. The pandemic, as well as a combination of other factors, have contributed to the current situation. As you may be aware, these fundamental challenges have led to the need for legislative intervention in several instances.
Among issues is a reported $33 million deficit and $4 million in fraudulent spending after, quote, years of mismanagement. The agency has struggled to hire in leadership roles as well. That's led to an increased reliance on contractors, with about 30% of the agency being run by outside orgs since 2021. Meanwhile, VDH has been paying those vendors late more often. Dr. Karen Shelton has been a VDH commissioner since 2023. She said the study reinforced challenges the agency faced over recent years, adding that her team didn't create them, but she was committed to solving them.
There's no doubt that the recommendations outlined in this report will lead to better public health across Virginia.
But Prince William County Democratic Senator Jeremy McPike left the committee ready to see heads roll.
There needs to be significant continued review of impacts to programs, financial management, internal audit. I mean, the whole control system needs to be torn down and rebuilt, an entire management structure.
Any legislative efforts to address the issues could come as early as January. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Well, the voting is over, but the counting does continue, and the analysis of what worked and what didn't is well underway. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and Michael Pope recap the week in politics and state government.
All right, election night has come and gone. Lots to talk about. Jeff Shapiro, let's talk about turnout. You've been looking at the turnout numbers, and they are down from 2020. But one thing that you have seen in these turnout numbers is you could even call it a red wave, perhaps a red rural wave.
Now, let's thank our friends over at VPAP for mashing these numbers. I mean, we're looking statewide at turnouts north of 70%. That's impressive, and it's certainly consistent with the turnouts we see in presidential years. But again, overall, in 24, turnouts were down from 20. That meant that Kamala Harris, as the Democrat, underperformed, even with a majority north of 5 percentage points, and Donald Trump performed better. These red rural localities, you know, pushing 80% are better in turnouts. It's a reminder, certainly, of the Youngkin strategy from 21 to really drive up turnout in the countryside and try to pair it with a somewhat fading turnout in suburbs. That lower turnout, for example, in Loudoun County, a cornerstone of the Democratic foundation in the state, may suggest a couple things. One, that, indeed, the economy was the biggest issue for a lot of voters. And two, maybe in a suburb where abortion rights carries considerable weight, it's not as weighty an issue in a southern state, the only southern state, and where there are few significant restrictions on terminating a pregnancy.
You mentioned Governor Youngkin's 2021 victory. I'm curious about his whereabouts on election night. You'd kind of expect him to be the public face of the Republican Party. Jeff Shapiro, where was the governor?
We're told that the governor followed the returns from the official residence, the executive mansion. We did not hear from him until the morning after, and it was in a written statement that was also posted to social media. It's somewhat interesting. I would argue that given the actual time and face time that the governor dedicated to this campaign, and that includes campaigning in behalf of Donald Trump and those three Republican congressional candidates in those three contested districts, that he might have dedicated a little FaceTime to election night itself. But remember, it didn't turn out too well in Virginia for Glenn Youngkin, and perhaps he decided to be unseen was one way to avoid unwelcome questions.
One of the things that happened this week is the election to Congress of two sitting state senators, which means two special elections, one in Northern Virginia and one in the Richmond suburbs and exurbs. And depending on who wins those, there might be more dominoes to fall. You know, in the Northern Virginia seat, there is a sitting member of the House of Delegates who might be facing a former prosecutor. And then in the Richmond exurbs, there is a member of the local board of supervisors that is a candidate. How many dominoes are we going to see falling?
We could see many dominoes falling. But before we talk about some of the new congressional faces from Virginia, we need to talk about one of the older ones, Jerry Connolly, who's represented in Northern Virginia, announcing on X, formerly Twitter, on Thursday morning that he's been diagnosed with esophageal cancer and is undergoing treatment. Connolly saying he will fight this disease with Irish determination and wit. The two congressional seats that have been snapped up by soon-to-be former state senators are in the 10th in Northern Virginia, Democrat Suhas Subramaniam, and also John McGuire, the Republican senator from Goochland, winning in the 5th district. There are already declared candidates for both. It's probably going to be a very busy January.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend.
Students from Highland County spent a recent school day at Elkhorn Lake learning about watershed health via canoe adventure. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee has this report.
A lively class of sixth graders from Highland County got a hands-on lesson in water quality, ecosystem health, and canoe navigation in early November. A Chesapeake Bay Foundation field trip took them to Elkhorn Lake, a 54-acre reservoir in the mountains of western Augusta County. They started by learning the water's path to the sea with Brooke Newton, who manages the canoe program in this part of the state. She traced the flow of the lake into the North River to the South Fork in Shenandoah proper.
And then the Potomac River, of course, flows into the
Chesapeake.
Yes! So we've got quite a few littler streams and creeks and rivers that make us connected. But is it
they unloaded canoes under the tutelage of educator Shepard Waldenberger.
All right, ready? One, two, three. Let's slide it straight off. All right, now gently roll it down.
And got a lesson in paddling and steering.
If I reach out behind me, drop it in, and push out, we're gonna make a nice turn to the right. You need to do it more, you can do it more. If I wanna turn the other way, I'll say switch, which means you guys switch to the other side for me. And I'll reach way out behind me, and I'll push out, and we'll make a nice turn to the left.
Newton told me that one of their main goals is to teach kids that what they do to the water in their own backyards has far-reaching impacts.
We run a lot of our canoe experiences on the western portions of the rivers of the South Fork of the Shenandoah and the upreaches of the James River. So we just want to have people understand that even though maybe you haven't seen the Chesapeake Bay, maybe never, maybe only a few times, that we are still 100% connected and everybody lives downriver from somewhere. So it's up to us to figure out what's happening up here with the water that we're sending out into our smaller tributaries and eventually out into the Chesapeake Bay.
After paddling out onto the lake, the kids raced to collect small sections of pool noodles attached to laminated cards, each printed with a different pollutant.
Cleaning products. Excellent.
Newton explained how nutrient pollution, comprised of excess phosphates and nitrates from fertilizer, can fuel harmful algal blooms that deprive the water of oxygen and light. Sixth grader Haven said the pollution game was her favorite part of the trip.
Probably trying to pick up the trash whenever we were canoeing. I've learned like how algae gets its nutrients and how fish like filter out the oxygen.
Students rowed three to a canoe, or two with an adult. The person in front was tasked with being the powerhouse paddler. The rear was the rudder, or captain, and...
Yeah, I'm the middle meatball.
Corey Conger and Felicity Zimmerman work for the restoration side of the foundation, inspecting riparian buffers and helping farmers implement regenerative practices. They joined the field trip and helped the kids paddle, or took directions.
One of them has been in a kayak before and the other has never paddled in a boat, and they are both listening to instructions and doing very well, so I'm pleased.
The one said she had canoed in Maine with her family and everything, and I'm the captain. I'm supposed to be telling them to switch and all that, but they're really telling me to switch, and I love it.
After a lunch break on shore, the kids used various equipment to test the water on metrics like temperature, pH, and dissolved oxygen in parts per million.
All right, what's the top number? Does it have D-O and then a number?
Hey, are they fishing?
No.
8.51.
Whoa, that's really close to your hypothesis.
They gave the lake an A or A+ in every subject except phosphates, which earned a D. For the final activity, the students rolled up their jeans and waded into a feeder creek to catch critters and big yellow nets.
It's freezing! Come on! Flying only.
The crawdads were very popular, but it was the macroinvertebrates, such as insect larvae and nymphs, that were the most illuminating. Their presence indicates a healthy aquatic environment.
Some of these smallest creatures can tell us the most about the health of the ecosystem.
PE and health teacher Cindy Wood said they've been taking field trips with the foundation for years. The most important lesson the kids learn?
I think just realizing like the pollution or what happens here ends up all the way down to the Chesapeake Bay. We probably have kids here that's never been even to the beach. So they probably don't realize being this far away the impact.
The Chesapeake Bay Foundation provides environmental education programming to more than 23,000 people each year. The application window for spring field trips for grades 4 and up is currently open through November 22nd. One-day programs cost $400 after subsidies from state and private funding, and teachers can apply for fee waivers. For WMRE News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
You can find photos of the field trip and a few links to some more information at WMRA.org and through the WMRA app. And some new research says the Great Dismal Swamp has released 50 million metric tons of carbon dioxide since the colonial era. Catherine Hafner from our partner station WHRO explains what that means.
The Great Dismal Swamp once covered more than a million acres. When George Washington's timber company showed up in 1763, they saw a huge business opportunity.
They used the cypress and juniper trees for shingles. And so all of those trees were essentially cut down in the swamp.
Geologist Miriam Jones with the U.S. Geological Survey. She says colonists drained the swamp for farmland. Lots of peat or bog has been lost. As the peat dwindles, it releases carbon into the atmosphere. Jones says the amount researchers calculated is like running 15% of the country's cars for a year.
Maybe in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't sound that great, but when you put the land use change of wetlands all together across the country or even across the world, is a very large change.
That makes it a rising source of greenhouse gases, fueling global warming.
Catherine Hafner reporting. And for WMRA News, I'm Matt Bingay. Thank you for listening to the WMRA Daily. Bob Levicky will be back on Monday. I hope you enjoy your weekend.